Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island?
Oh, I reside by the yonder side where the money hides from the public eye and the washing lines are for the uniforms, cause we all had jobs before you were born. I was in Shunil, City 1-2-0, so I rolled a smoke cloud to a mushroom hill. I was up all night cause the money.
It's Jack from Cultaholic, taking over very briefly from Tom on Desert Island Graps. He's very graciously lent me his series because it's one that I really, really wanted to do, because my guest this week is a very special one. He is one of the leading figures, not just in UK battle rap, but in international battle rap as well. He does his own music, he's trained as a wrestler, and most importantly for this episode, he is a proper hardcore wrestling fan. I'd like to welcome to the show Shotty Horror. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I do have to confess, we might as well just be honest with the audience.
Let's do it.
We did record a good 20 or 30 minutes of excellent interview content, and then my mistake technologically meant that we couldn't keep it. But Owen, massive shout out to him. He's fixed all the issues. We look good now. This one should be good. And I already know one of your matches, but we're not going to let that spoil it. How are you doing, Shotty, anyway?
Good, man. Yeah, really enjoying WrestleMania week. And mm-hmm. Really enjoyed the two takeover shows. Yeah, man, best time of the year for the wrestling fans. So it's good to do something like this and get involved with the fun times of WrestleMania week. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And just to explain the format to anybody who doesn't know, we are taking Shotty to a desert island and he can only take three wrestling matches with him. So we're going to find out a little bit about his preferences in the world of wrestling, a little bit about his own career as well, and hopefully learn some very interesting stuff. So first of all, I just have to, you know what, I might change it around this time because I now know a little bit more about your training with the wrestling. Yeah. You are way more experienced in wrestling than I personally knew. So you've trained as a wrestler from what I understand is quite a young age, actually.
Yeah, my first goal at wrestling was like 99, 2000. Totally took over by the Attitude Era. I lifelong fan. The same, the first thing that I ever watched, I'm pretty sure it was First Rumble. I had that on VHS. And then Hulk Hogan's Rock of Wrestling. I was just encapsulated. I was just totally taken over by this thing that was on the TV. By the time I get to my early teens, I was like, much like every other young boy that was into at the time, I was like, that's it. I'm chasing my dreams. I'm going for it. And I ended up finding myself in Stoke at a place called GBH. And I trained under Chris Curtis first and Mark Five Star Flash Beltram, I think his surname is, might have watched that. And was just exposed to this crazy world, man. Setting rings up and getting big scars on my legs because of it, and just like getting beat up. The boards, like I've got these two big, massive, like not, they're not even that big, but they're quite prominent across both thighs where I was carrying this board, one of the boards of the ring, and the wood must have been so sharp, and it just right across my legs. And it's my two proudest scars I've got. I was like, every time I was football, that's from a wrestling ring now.
One thing that I kind of realised when we were doing our own promotion at What Culture with WCPW was that the kind of way to feel accepted backstage amongst these wrestlers who've seen it all and everything, and it sounds so counterproductive because everyone's a huge fan. You've got to, did you find this as well? You've got to try and pretend like you don't, you're not, you don't care. You're really chilled, yeah. But yeah. You're kind of freaking out at the same time. Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a ring. Oh, this boots, knee pads. This is real. Oh, these guys are huge. And then, yeah, you try and play it cool as well. Like, and they must be able to see it a mile off. They must see guys like us every week. Like, check this kid trying to act like he's not totally blown away by this.
But, yeah.
I remember one training session. We was about to get in the ring. And I think it was Johnny Nitro. I think it was John Morrison. And Mercury, Joey Mercury. It might not have been Joey. No, it wasn't. It was the other two. What was them guys? Joey Mercury and who was Joey Mercury's tag partner in ECW and that?
I can't think off the top of my head.
But them two was in the UK at the time doing a Hardy Boys tribute. They was earning money by just dressing as the Hardy Boys and got Butlins and Pontins and stuff while they were still doing the stuff. And they came and trained with us. And I remember watching them in the ring and just seeing like next level stuff, like just unbelievable stuff. And then yeah, for a year or two I got beat up a lot. Back then they used to just beat you up until you stopped coming, which was really weird for a business model.
Yeah. It's kind of the thing they do, isn't it? Or it at least was, but the business is changing gradually as we move forwards. But yeah. I feel like we do probably need to talk about your persona, because you're obviously from a world which I've heard people from both battle rap and from wrestling say are very similar. People who've got interest in both say that they are very similar worlds because a lot of it is around personas. And if anybody's not familiar with the world of battle rap, I feel like one of your great strengths is, I mean, you're a bit of an all-rounder. You've got the wordplay, you've got the performance aspect down, but a lot of it seems very, I don't know the word to describe it as, but you seem very raw and legitimate on stage, and you're not pretending to be like American or anything. You're from Manchester, you're doing your thing, and that comes across a lot. Do you have to put that on, or is that just kind of a thing that comes out naturally?
I guess it's like what some of the wrestlers say. It's me turned up to 100. You know, you have to draw inspiration from somewhere, but you know, keep what makes you you. And I think the best wrestlers do that as well. As much as it is a show, and as much as everyone in there, most guys within the battle rap circuit get on a lot, and we talk before and after the battle, much like pro wrestling. There is a certain element where this is entertainment. People have paid money to watch this, so it needs to be larger than life. They don't want to see Joe Bloggs versus John Smith. A little rhyme, and you'll find a lot of the newer guys in battle rap, they like to be that Joe Bloggs and John Smith, and not really do the whole pageantry and take it up a notch, and it kind of doesn't work as well as it used to do. But yeah, I come from pro wrestling, like I say, with my life, absolutely above any sport, above any cartoon or anything. I was always the kid that I would drag, even now, say I was a kid, even right now, I've literally just come off one of the biggest meetings of my life, and I kept dragging the conversation to pro wrestling. It's like, oh yeah, well, it's like this, we have to do it like this. And it's like, would you just shut up about macho, man? It's like, but I feel like that's what always gave me the upper hand, is to just understand how some of my idols marketed themselves, and hearing the stories of how some of the conversations went with Vince or whatever, and, you know, trying to be a larger-than-life character that people can live vicariously through for a minute while they're watching this thing. Bit of escapism and that. I always feel like the guys in our industry that have took pointers from the pro wrestling industry seem to excel, because the parallels are so, like, there. Like, there's so many parallels.
There are really so many parallels. You've got, I think, the same way of looking at different competitors as well. Like some guys in battle rap are good at wordplay. Some are good. Some have got a look. A look is also a thing as well. Just the same as wrestling. Some guys are, you know, workers in the ring. Some are charismatic guys. And I think it goes both ways quite a lot. But I feel like that's a nice way to bring us on to your first Desert Island match. So what are you taking on to the desert first?
So I have to go in a chronological order. No, not the chronological order. The order that I experienced these matches in my little pro wrestling fandom and my quest to be a pro wrestler at the time. So, like I was saying before, it started with Rock and Wrestling, like the cartoon, the early Royal Rumbles, then the early WrestleManias, and British Bulldog was a huge thing to me, and you know, seeing someone from where I'm from and stuff like that. It was super huge. I was really into it. So was my big brother. And my big brother's favorite wrestler was Bret Hart. So naturally, my favorite wrestler was Owen Hart. So WrestleMania 10, opening match, Owen versus Bret. That has to be the first match that I take to the Desert Island.
This is the moment Bret Hart thought he would never see, that he would actually be facing his brother.
Let me ask you this, Vince McMahon. What do you think is going through the minds of Helen and Stu Hart right now, huh? Huh? What do you think they're thinking? I was hoping that Stu Hart would be here. I wanted to see him here today in his orthopedic tuxedo. I wanted to see him at ringside.
His orthopedic tuxedo.
That's right. That's right. Look at this.
I would doubt that either parent is watching this. I can't imagine that they would. And the look of intensity on the face of Owen Hart says it all. He has something to prove here at WrestleMania. He wants to prove to the world, and I think more than that to himself, that he's a better wrestler than Bret Hart.
I can just say this.
And there's a takedown by Owen.
Bret is trying to keep this a wrestling match. He doesn't want to make his brother Owen any madder than he already is, because, oh,
what a slap. And now the fireworks is going to begin.
Owen said it, and I think it'll come true. Bret Hart will never make it to any kind of championship match today.
It's a big shout. It's often remembered as the best opening match in WrestleMania history.
Yeah.
Obviously, which I think you might have liked at the time, Owen surprisingly got the win in that match.
Yeah, because I always wanted to believe that maybe I could beat my brother up. Knowing that, I couldn't. It whooped my ass every time. But that was the moment when I was like, all right, maybe I could do this. Maybe, you know, it gave me a chance to rebel against him a little bit, like, oh, you're Bret, well, I'm Owen. And then Owen getting the win in out of the blue as well, like, it was just amazing. But the match leading up to that, the psychology, the story being told in that match of Owen not giving a shit, basically, and just wanting to hurt this guy like he isn't a family member. You're an opponent. Not only are you an opponent, you're someone who I hate. And Bret having this, I don't want to hit my little brother thing going on. It was just amazing. And at the time, it was about time Owen started getting a bit of a look with him being arguably the best wrestler on the roster at the time, or one of them, technically. But he just didn't have, at the 90s, in the 90s, it was all about big guys. Owen wasn't as big. Bret wasn't big. Owen was even smaller. That really wasn't going to fly. I think Owen represented a lot of the little brothers.
I would have been too young at the time, but looking back, I always sympathise with Bret more as an older brother myself, trying to keep the younger brother down, but that, I guess that's just the way of the world.
And funny about that, the lead up to the match, when you go back and look at it, it's like the booking back then, even not even just the booking, like pro wrestling back then was super toxic, in like toxic masculinity and toxic attitudes, because Bret was in the wrong. You're in a tag match, bro. You're getting 2-on-1. like, why are you not tagging this world-class athlete? Regardless of him being your brother, this is a world-class athlete that can do damage. Why are you not tagging him in and getting your respite? And he just didn't. And then Owen got so mad at the end, he kicked his leg out of his leg. Like,
of course.
Do you know what I mean? And so, yeah, damn right, that's what he should have done. But I think Bret was in terms of the story, Bret was selfish and stupid. But I think a lot of that early booking was a bit like that, maybe reflective of the writer or the guy who running the company at the time or whatever. But it was just a bit weird. Like, why would you I'm the big guy. I'm going to take on these two animals on my own. No, man.
It's interesting that you should say that, because the first big feud that I remember as a kid was a few years later, Triple H and The Rock. But in my school playground, the way, like the law of the jungle or whatever, the cool kids were the ones who were good at football. I'm not good at football. I wasn't one of the cool kids in primary school. So I always found myself siding more with Triple H, because all the lads that I wished I was as good at football as, they all loved The Rock and Austin. And I was like, well, no, I prefer Triple H then because of that. It's weird how when you're a kid, you might be actually, in a strange way, less susceptible to like the face heel dynamic. You just go for who you like. Yeah.
You almost find someone that you can identify with. Someone that can represent you, which was dope about the WWF WWE in the early days. There was so many different characters and underdogs. My favorite wrestler for the longest was Tatanka, and I don't know why.
Fair, yeah.
I don't know why. Like, Tatanka was my guy. I collect Tatanka posters. Like, now it's so crazy. But there's just something about him when I was a kid. And then when I would tell my friends, oh, Tatanka's my best friend. So I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Dealing with Hogan and Warrior and that here, like, you're talking about Tatanka. But no, Owen spoke to me, man. It's like, where I was in my life and stuff like that. Owen spoke to me. And then later on, after really getting into the stuff and learning more, becoming smarter to what's going on, I just felt like he was one of the best performers the industry's ever seen. And that match was perfect. And then when you hear the stories that it was supposed to be Bruce and Brett, like, convinced Vince to let it be Owen because he didn't like where Owen was on the card. I think that's just amazing big brother thing to do. And
yeah,
it was beautiful. But the storyline was amazing. Like, even the Survivor Series match where Owen was the only one that got eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he's like Bruce and that, like, he didn't even have matching tights on, like, he looked like some bum, like how is he still in the match but Owen's not? But as it played out, it was amazing. I think it's one of the best feuds in pro wrestling history just because it's so relatable.
Fair enough. And I feel like I should mention at this point, I mentioned it in our first attempt at a recording, but I'll mention it again. A lot of people will hear that, you know, if they're not familiar with you or the world of hip-hop or battle rap, they might think, well, a lot of rappers pretend to be into wrestling, but you are legitimately hardcore into wrestling because I mentioned last time as well your Wu-Tang remix that's recently gone up on your YouTube channel, Shotty Horror. Make sure everyone spells it right because it's got an H on the end. It'll be in the title of this.
It's a palindrome. It's just H-O-R-R-H, horror is horror backwards. Yep.
On your YouTube channel, you've done a Wu-Tang remix, which is like it's 3 minutes long, I think. And in it, you mention everyone from Stan Stasia all the way up to Roman Reigns. And in between, you've got references, you've got bars about Bubba Ray Dudley, you've got bars about, I think, Sean and Diesel in the early 90s as well.
Yeah. Like, and I think it's important to note that it's not a wrestling-based song. That is just like my everyday. Yeah, we are what we eat, and that's mentally as well, or like the media we consume. Or so a lot of these rappers rap about money and women and that because that's their life day to day. My life day to day is pro wrestling.
Like
that's all I can. I was just watching a Stan Stasiak match, and now we've got to write this verse. Damn right, Stan Stasiak's getting mentioned.
I mean, do you find that in your line of work, in your industry of rap and battle rap? Are there a lot of people similar to you in that they are legitimate wrestling fans, like proper ones?
I'd say there's a lot, but there's a spectrum. I think you'll find like a lot of guys a lot of fans in the industry. There's some good guys that really know the stuff. As far as the battlers go, in the UK, you've got like me, Frankie Fraser, O'Shea, and whenever we're on the same card or wherever we're on tour or we're on the road together or whatever, that's all the conversation is forever. I was really shocked and surprised at their knowledge because, like you say, a lot of guys, there's this aesthetic, this retro aesthetic of wrestling that really cool, especially with like Griselda and, you know, like West Side Gun. He owns HLG Wrestling and stuff. His music is very like wrestling centric. His artwork's very wrestling centric. So it's like, it is a cool aesthetic at the moment, as much as like, you know, because it sits there in the pocket with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, all these kind of things that growing up that people love to reference modern pop culture. Like, there's no better than the WWF or the WCW. NWO. Yeah. Everyone wants to mention the NWO, but they can only they can only tell you Hall, Nash, and then what's the other guy, Hogan, whatever. Like, bro, I'm talking about Scott Norton. I'm talking about...
You're going deeper in.
Yeah, bro. I'm talking about the 5 minutes that Hennig was in there and...
I was surprised that you mentioned there, when you mentioned a few of the UK rappers who are big into wrestling. I've met Frankie Fraser at an indie show. I know he's into wrestling. I was surprised you mentioned O'Shea, but then I remembered, I think I've seen a battle of his where he's wearing an NWO t-shirt.
Yeah, it actually says NWO.
Oh, right. So he's, I see what you're doing.
I'll give him his dues. He knows his stuff, man. I actually have this little game, like the game show Jeopardy. I built this version of it where I upload all these really, you should have a go of it, I these really hard questions, and I like to put two people against each other, and I actually did O'Shea versus Frankie Fraser, and O'Shea was talking about how he's the biggest Hogan guy ever, he had a Hogan t-shirt on for the thing and all that, and he got two Hogan questions wrong. Like, really easy ones. But some of the other knowledge he has, but O'Shea is primarily WCW, and he will argue till he's blue in the face that that is the best bed and best. I kind of agree, but that was the best thing ever, and you can't say nothing bad about WCW, particularly Goldberg or Hollywood in front of O'Shea. He loves it, man.
I mentioned there that I met Frankie at an indie show, and it was in the Midlands. Obviously, in recent years, the kings of the Midlands independent scene in the UK have been Dunn, Seven, and Bate, British Strong Style. And I'm pretty sure, have I seen you're like, you know those guys?
Yeah, me and Trent are like that, man. Trent, I love Trent to pieces. That's a good friend of mine. I met, so myself, my friend Sean, and a rapper called FaZe What, we went to... I can't remember the first one we might have gone to together. It might have been Progress at Ali Pali. And we was there, and we seen Trent. And Trent was, like, looking kind of, like, funny at me. So go over and we're like, yo, can we get a picture? And there's even one of the pictures, like, Trent's looking at me in the picture. So it was me, Pete, and Tyler and stuff. And then when I go home and I tag him in it, he was like, I fucking knew it was you. I knew. Like, he's like, we all watch you, we all love your stuff, type of thing. And then he just kept inviting me. I went to all the Midlands stuff. What's that fed called he had out in the Midlands? What, his Fight Club?
FCP, Fight Club Pro.
Yeah, I went to a couple of them shows and watched him out there. And our relationship was built. He introduced me to Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate. And then when people see you talking to them guys, then the other guys start coming along. And
yeah.
Just amazing people. Like, when I started training, and because I trained with Sam Gradwell, Johnny Brannigan at Grand Pro Wrestling. Amazing, amazing company, amazing guys. Obviously, Sam's in NXT UK and that now. Mm-hmm. So when I started training, Pete found out. Pete DM'd me straight away and said, you know, we're working on our gym over here. You're welcome to come train when lockdown's up and stuff. And he's the best technical wrestler on the planet right now, so.
Oh, fantastic. His match with Kushida was awesome.
Oh, my
God. The other day. The thing I like about Pete Dunne especially is that he can do all the pretty things that he wants to, but he makes everything feel gritty and real. He could, if he wanted to, he could go out and be like the flippiest, most aesthetically pleasing guy, but he keeps it real and grounded, and it's 100%. Like, I think it's such a good combination.
And in the little, at Progress... I think it was at Progress. He'd wrestled, I want to say it was Eddie Dennis. And then he did this whole speech about, you know, Brit Rest isn't dead if these are the guys. It was this amazing promo. He was like, we're leaving it in good hands. He was about to go and sign his deal. But he was still very much like this heel persona. And then when it comes to like the merch area and being outside, all the wrestlers just went straight back to being themselves, like out of the thing. And Pete kept that kayfabe going, and I loved it. I went, yo, I can I have a picture, bro? And he's like,
yeah, I've seen two people do that at WCPW. One was Joe Hendry, who is like a good friend. I think he's an amazing guy.
That's not Big Guns, is it? That's not Big Guns, Joe. That's the other. That's
Joe Hendry, the one who he sings his entrance music and he does the parody songs.
He's
great. Yeah.
He's so good.
He was like our top heel at the time, and he would come out at merch and sit at a table with shades on and a suit, and he'd have a little sign saying like, "Do not approach the champion." And he'd have like one of our ring crew stood in front of him, like, "Can you just step back, please, away from?" It was so good.
That's what you want.
The other one was Bubba Ray Dudley. We were backstage after a show that he'd done, and he just asked me. I don't think he knew that I was. I don't know if he knew if I was ring crew or if I was part of running the show or anything. But he just went, "Oh, can you like help me take one of my bags to the car?" And I was like, "Obviously, I'm going to say yes." I'm like, "I'm not going to be. I'm not going to stand up to Bubba Ray Dudley." I was like, "Yeah, of course I will, mate. Yeah." And I was like wheeling his bag out with him, and we get to his car, and some guy like is a fan there. He just like he's like, "Oh, can I just have an?" And before the sentence could even leave his mouth, Bubba Ray just goes, "No," and just gets in the car. And I was like, you've left me here to smooth things up. I'm now dealing with like the situation. The car's driven on." And I was like, but I get why he did it, because I learned that a lot of the best wrestlers are the ones that put the most emphasis on storytelling and immersion and keeping everything. Yeah.
Well, look at Taker. Taker really didn't do that interview run until he was out of the game, man, and like possibly the best ever to do it. But yeah, I think it adds so much more to the experience if you meet the character. Like Pete Dunne knew who it was. Trent had already told him, and he still did it. He still went, "Man, I thought I was badass. A funny story about that same thing. At the time, I remember I'd not ate, so I got to the point where I felt quite sick. So my friend brought me a cup of tea. So I was about to drink this cup of tea, and then Keith Lee walked past. So my boy said to Keith, "Yo, can we get a picture?" And so Keith Lee was like, "Yeah, okay." And then I'm literally about to sip my drink, and Keith Lee grabbed me like this, boom, biggest man in the room. And
he's a big man.
Bro, I spilled a full cup of scalding hot tea down the car for Keith Lee.
Oh.
He did this slow, like, turn around, look at me, like, and, bro, the fear of God was in me, like, but he let out this little corner smile to let me, like, and then I was just like, "Oh my God." And genuinely, I was like, "All right, yeah. That was scary.
I don't know how he's not. I mean, I know there was maybe some hints of maybe illness or something, but he should have had a WrestleMania program in the works from months ago. He should have been. I mean, I feel like he deserves to be in a way higher place than he is.
Yeah, he's such a talent. I think, as we've seen with Andrade recently, it doesn't matter the level of talent you've got. This is a company that's like the best guys on the planet. Like, and you know, like, there's not a level of talent they've not seen at this point. So, I don't know, man. It's, if they've got something for you at the time, they're going to do it. But even them things seem short-lived at the minute now. It's really hard to, it's really hard to get invested in some stuff at the minute because of how short-lived storylines are and stuff like that. And I do feel for guys like Keith Lee getting lost in the pack. But things seem to be changing now with like AEW coming and there being another option and stuff like that, which is always amazing for the business or any business for there to be other places to go and work. So, but yeah, Keith Lee put the fear of God in me with a couple of I was going to try and go and get Trent and that. Like,
I was going to ask, why do you think Pete was keen to get you involved? Do you think he saw something in like your performative aspect from the world of battle rap maybe?
Yeah, I think there's just the intrigue of what are the promos going to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah, to come up with the stuff that I come up with and it doesn't have to rhyme gives me a lot more freedom. One of the first things I did with GPW, Johnny Branigan was so intrigued and Sam Gradwell was so intrigued to see what I would do promo. Like, after, like, I think it was the first session, he was like, "Right, we're not training no more until you cut a promo on RPD." And I was like, oh, we was in RPD's gym. It's his place. Amazing guy. RPD, RP Davis, who's like a up-and-coming guy on the indie scene in the UK, former boxer. Amazing guy, amazing talent. And he, like me, was transitioning from a different profession, from boxing to pro wrestling. And so I'm like doing the from music and battle rap, getting into pro wrestling. So these guys was all working together to help me figure it out. So this one particular day in training, he's like, right, we're not training no more until everyone get out of the ring, you stay in the ring, cut a promo on him. And I'm from a place where we go to the knuckle. I am going to make you really want to beat me up. And I remember seeing Ryan's face go from smiling to like, are you taking the piss? And this is an ex-professional boxer that will whoop me. And I've seen it hit in his face, but just next to him, I seen Johnny Brannigan's face like,
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said, yo, you're up there with Gradwell as like with the best promo in the UK. And it was my first promo, and I really wasn't happy with it. Like, there was so many little bits where my timing was off. First, and nervous. I had like a tube of like deodorant or something for the mic. Like, it was like, use this.
Yeah.
It felt really weird. Like, coming from this, yo, you got to keep it real world. To be like holding this bit of deodorant and slagging this guy off that had been nothing but hospitable to me. And they loved it. And I think that kind of, people must have spoke about that on the inside.
Well, sorry to cut you off, but I have to ask, because I meant to ask this before actually, and I'm glad that we've done a second recording now, because I get asked this now. One of the battles that got me into battle rap in a major way, I was already kind of familiar with it, but obviously you versus Arsenal, it was one of the biggest rap battles in maybe not even the UK, maybe ever in the world, I suppose. It's on a crazy number of views.
It's the most viewed English language speaking rap battle in existence. I know that's really a weird like title.
Yeah.
There's the Malaysian League, Flip Top. They get crazy views.
Isn't the Russian League as well?
The Russians get crazy views.
Yeah.
And Disaster versus Oxymiron, that competes with mine and Arsenal's battle, but there is parts of Arabic in there, there's parts of Russian in there, so
okay.
It can't actually be classed as like the English language battles.
So as far as English speaking battles go,
number
you've got the record for, yeah,
on the planet, more than the Eminem ones, more than anything.
Arsenal vs Shotty Horace on Shotty, let's go.
Yo, some said I wasn't gonna show up. Well, that's what the talking's about. But I show up to the showdown to show off when the show's on for all of the crowd. I am here, applying fear like a 4-4 or a hawk in your mouth when somebody forces you to withdraw an amount more than a mortgage and house out of your storage account. I am fierce, like walking towards that last zombie corpse on the ground after you've used all of your rounds and you're not sure if it's down.
Yes!
You are scared. It's unfair. That's why he has to bring his mates to portray some John Gotti. But our name says it all. He needs an Arsenal and I just need that one shot.
Even if you've never watched a rap battle in your life, I'd suggest watching Shotty Horror versus Arsenal, the first one especially, because this is where I was going to ask my question. You say some stuff in that battle that I was going to ask, is it similar to promos in wrestling? Are you a bit concerned about what you're going to say? Because you say some stuff like about his background. You say, I'm going to be the kryptonite to this kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff about like the...
Well, he put me in hot water for that later on. He put me in real hot water. In that battle, he says to me, why don't you come to UW in New Jersey? Come to a man's league. So I say to him, in the battle, I say, book me. And he goes, I will. That was his own league. So literally, when we left that battle, we got negotiating and he booked me to battle Daylight, who is actually a Crip. So we battled in Newark, New Jersey in America. I flew out there on my own.
For those who don't know Daylight, there's something about him. He's not the most imposing looking battle rapper around. He looks fairly intimidating, but not really, not compared to some guys, but there's just this legitimacy about him.
Yeah,
he's a bit unhinged.
Well, one of them is the big massive Spawn tattoo he's got on his face. He's got the Spawn.
He's got, of course. How did I forget that? He's got a face tattoo. Yeah,
he's got this big, really like thick line work Spawn outline, almost Ultimate Warrior. It's like, imagine having the Ultimate Warrior face paint tattooed on your face. This is what he lives with. That's him. So not only that, is he wears a balaclava or a ski mask in the battles, and he is a Crip, which are one of the most notorious gangs in the world. And so basically he books me against this Crip. So I just, and I'd seen Daylight like pretty much bully guys and put a balaclava or a ski mask on and get in people's faces. So I've done like 3 rounds of anti-Crip, I'm gonna fuck you up and beat everybody up in this room stuff. I put a ski mask on and get in his face. Bro, when I got to that place, I flew out there on my own. I had this Canadian girlfriend at the time who was like, she was like a millionaire. She was like, oh, Louis Vuitton backed up and whatnot. And so she meets me there. Me and her walk into this place. There was no police. There was Hell's Angels policing the place.
Like Hog Wild.
Like Hog Wild, bro. I was like, where the hell is Bischoff? It was mad, bro. We walk in there, it's a sea of red and blue. Yeah, bro, and every head in the building just whipped, looks at me like, some people know who I am, most people don't know who I am. I'm just this white kid walking in, and I'm literally the only white kid in the area. Prior to that, I need to say this. I got to the hotel, and my room was on the first, like, it was in, like, the lobby area near the reception, and the guy in the reception, I went into my room, and I went to shut my door, and there was, like, honest to God, about 10 locks down the door.
Oh.
So I wasn't thinking, did these locks just keep breaking instead of fixing and putting new locks on? The guy knocks on my door and says, I just wanted to tell you about the protocol for this room. This room is the home invasion capital of Newark, New Jersey. What? No wonder it was so cheap. What?
Oh.
Every time you shut this door, you lock the door, because it was just not far from the entrance. What these guys do is they run in. That's the first room they see. They boot the door off. They rob whoever lives there, and they'll do it again. They'll keep doing it again. So I was already uneasy. I was like, have you not got another room? No, whatever. Okay, cool. My ride comes, picks me up, takes me to this venue. Like I say, it was Hell's Angels outside. We walk in, sea of red and blue separated. And the promoter comes over to me. He's like, so flustered and panicked. And he's like, I need to introduce you to someone because right now you look like food. I was like, oh my God. And bear in mind, I'm trying to keep going over my bars. I've got this really pressure cooker, stressful thing that I'm about to do. And they're like, oh, if I don't introduce you to this guy, you're probably going to die tonight. I'm like, oh, wow. So they introduced me to this guy, and he was something off Netflix. He was, oh, my God, petrifying guy. Like, and they go, oh, here's Shotley. Like, bear in mind, this guy had, like, his own security pouring drinks and stuff for him. And, like, he was just sat there on the table, cool bastard, just sat there, proper gangster and that. Here's Shotty. He said, oh, he's a big fan of yours. And he goes, here's Shotty. And the guy just goes,
Oh.
Waves me away. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? So anyway, we go on stage. I do these 3 rounds with Daylight and I win. It was a real 8 Mile moment in the sense of I've gone up there. Everyone was slow to react at first. And then they're all like, oh my God. And then all these Crips are then shouting to Daylight like, yo, he's fucking you up. And I fucked him up. I put the ski mask on in the 3rd round to get in his face. And I really put on this persona, like, I'm the man inside. I was petrified. I could wait to get off the stage and get home.
You can't tell with you, I feel, when you watch your... I mentioned off camera or off the audio, your battle where the light goes out in the middle of your battle. And for anyone who's not seen it, you're rapping, you're doing the middle of your, I don't know if it's the first or the second round, but you're in the middle of your round, there's a power cut, the lights go out. And have you seen that clip of Kobe Bryant where another player goes to fake a ball into his face?
And he just doesn't blink.
Doesn't move at all. And the commentators are like, that's the play of the game. He's... Yeah. And it was kind of like that because you don't, you can't tell. When you say that you're nervous inside, I think it must be one of the biggest assets to a battle rapper is the ability to seem unfazed, because you just keep going in its dark. And you were mentioning how even your bars were referring to turning the lights out or something like that.
Literally, the second that I said, I can't remember the setup, but I know the line was, as soon as I out your lights, and I know as soon as this interview's finished, I'll remember the full line, but I said, soon as I out your lights, and the lights went out, and the whole, it took the crowd like 2 seconds to be like, whoa, what just happened? It's like divine intervention moment. And everyone was, even the promoter, was adamant that I had slipped someone some money in the back and had them switch the light for that. And he's like, no, how necessary would that be? But that battle was actually against Nestle in front of Drake. Drake was hosting the battle. That was the first battle of mine that Drake had hosted. And I'd won on like ability, on everything, but they had these weird new mics. They were like these long mics, and they was stationed just above us. What I didn't realize, I was quite far away from the mics, and my opponent was directly underneath both mics. So me, with my British accent, the judges couldn't understand anything I'm saying. So they gave the battle to Nestle, but Nestle stopped and was like, nah, he won that. You can't, that's a moment in battle rap history. The lights went out, like, you can't, this is, he won that. Which I thought was awesome. So shout out to Nestle, shout out to Drake for that.
I'm sure we'll get on to more stuff involving your battle rap career and your music later on, but I do have to stay faithful to the format.
Yeah, it's a Northern match Ireland. That,
absolutely, and it's a match, well, if you're keeping it the same as our first attempt, then it's a match that I've heard you talk very passionately about, but what is your second match that we're taking on to the island?
My second match is Tiger Mask versus Dynamite Kid, April 21st, 1983. Tiger Mask の相手はDynamite Kid。そして全く未知数ではありますが、これがタイガーマスクです。そして今このファンが待ち望んだカードをさばくレフリーのミスター高橋が両選手の間に入りました。試合前の簡単な注意あるいはボディチェックが行われています。このタイガーマスク、日本では全くの未知数でありますが、一体どんなファイトを見せてくれるのか。一方その相手ダイナマイトキッド、イギリスの爆弾機構士。
ニュージャパンプロレスリング、it's the WWF and NWA Junior Heavyweight Championship. These guys had a series of 7 matches. It was 6-1 to Tiger Mask. But this was the peak. This was the apex. And I said it before, I think it was like the Mona Lisa, the Venus, the Milo of wrestling for me. This was it. Like, the psychology was there. The stuff was really driven in, was nailed in. Like, it looked so painful and stiff, everything. But you knew he was safe. The slow building crescendo of the match, mixed with all this new innovative crazy stuff, that this is happening before Hulkamania, and it's like, and they're doing stuff the Young Bucks would do, stuff like that. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so crazy. It's like you could turn the channel over and Andre would be on, but these two guys, Tom Billington, Dynamite Kid, and Tiger Mask, they just put on an absolute clinic. And I have this relationship with this thing, because this was, because of this match and because of this tape, was the first time I got a receipt or got stiff.
Right. So
I was training at the time under Chris Curtis, like I said, 5-star Flash. And these times you have to spend hundreds of pounds to get certain tapes. It was, the internet wasn't, it was in its infancy. It wasn't that big. Well, it was big, but you didn't have access to pro wrestling like you do now, where you could just go and find something and get it. You'd have to go to tape collectors, you'd have to go to little places. And my trainer at the time, he saw something in me where he really wanted me to work the Tiger Mask Dynamite style. So he lent me this super expensive tape on the premise that I would give it him back next week.
I'm already nervous. I'm already worried about this story.
And I didn't. I didn't go training for a year. I emailed them like, "Hey man, I got your tape. When I come to train, this is a year later. I'm like, "Hey man, I got that tape. Sorry about everything. Life got in the way. Can I come train again?" Da-da-da. He's like, "Yeah, of course, come train. No problem." He played it so cool. Yeah, it'd be great to see you. I go there, Mark, whose tape it was, he asks the head coach, Chris, like, can I get Adam in the ring and work over some stuff? Oh my God, and here's me, green as goose turd, like, yeah, bro, let's get in the ring. I'm gonna get to run the rope, I'm gonna get to bump properly and stuff like that. And I got beat up, like really beat up for 5 minutes. And I remember this, like, X-Pac, two kicks to the head and a spin kick to the chin thing. And it busted my lip, chipped my tooth. And he's like, get your ass. I was like, tell me afterwards, I'm just a kid. And then Chris was like, right, that's it. You've had enough. You got your revenge. Everyone back in line. And I was like, revenge? He's like, yeah, that's the fucking Tiger Mask tape, you bastard. Like, I was like, it's in my bag, bro. Give him the Tiger Mask tape. But then our relationship got great from there. Like, they really saw something in me, man. I used to bump ferociously. I'd get down on the mat really hard, make the biggest noise I could make. And a lot of the other lads in training didn't do that. And I was 13, 14 at the time, really enjoying it. But this match, the stuff that was in this match, collar and elbow to wrist lock to hammer lock to drop toe hold in like half a second, like, Tiger Mask, yeah. One of the most underrated guys ever.
Absolutely. I've mentioned to you before the way that people don't, you will have a very different appreciation of wrestling that I do because you've done more of it. You've trained and you're currently still looking at training as well. And from just little bits and pieces that I've done, like getting superkicked by Will Ospreay, which is still a surreal sentence to come out of my mouth.
Yeah.
But you barely... If you watch the footage, it looks like he takes my head off.
Yeah.
But in truth, I barely felt it because I think this ties in nicely with the Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid match. What a lot of people don't understand about wrestlers is the body control is surreal. Like with top level wrestlers, it's insane what they can do in terms of restraint and pulling their punches and stuff.
100%. And I didn't even know. I didn't realize that at the time when I was, you know, training with them guys, like I said, it was bully culture, so they wasn't really pulling punches. They was beating us up and trying to see who really loved this sport enough to stick about after that. And I did to an extent. But then later on, training under Sam Gradwell and Johnny Brannigan, and getting in the ring with Gradwell, running spots, and have him looking like he's beating the shit out of me and not feeling hardly anything. You feel the strikes are there, you understand, and then you come home with the little bruises on the collarbones and stuff like that and pain, and you stiffen that the next day. But when it comes to moves and locks and headlocks and stuff, I was saying, me and my friend who I train with, Sean, you know, at first we was really locking them headlocks in, and you know, the wrist locks, we was really like putting a bit on it, and he was like, you guys are blowing each other up. You're hurting each other. You're going to cause each other injury, but you're blowing each other up. You're gassed after like 3 minutes, and this is because of the amount of pressure you're applying. So then he was like, right, I'll run the same spot with you, and he ran the spot with me, and honest to God, like you say, the body control. And I said to him there, and then I said, that's a professional wrestler. The guys I used to train with, you know, you can learn that in mums. What Gradwell does, what Johnny Brannigan does, what RPD does, and these guys, it's unbelievable. The body control is unbelievable. And safe workers like that are going to prolong careers a lot longer. And it's like you said, you have to experience it to understand that.
Mm.
It's such an inside skill that the masses, they really should get the praises from the masses from that, but then that's counterintuitive and oxymoronic of what they're doing. You don't want to go, oh, I really don't hurt guys. Like, you want to go, I can hurt guys.
There's like a real duality between what you're meant to present externally and what is actually respected internally, and it's almost totally different. It's so surreal. But
the internal thing, much like yourself, the internal thing is what intrigues me more.
Mm.
The internal thing, taking a super kick off Will Ospreay, the practice it would take for Will Ospreay not to hurt you, but for someone to think he is hurting, it's almost like it's an unrewarded skill. We don't say to someone, oh, he doesn't hurt him. They do on the inside, but it's such an amazing, unique art form that these guys do, man. And my hat goes off to them. And even more so when once I got in there. Like, just the simple things like taking a bump's cool, but try taking a bump off a clothesline when a guy's right next to you.
Yeah.
Right on you. Where does your arm go? What do you do? So many little tiny nuances which are amazing. So going back and watch that Dynamite and Tiger match, and you see what they're doing in there, and to think, you know, maybe this isn't as stiff as it looks. They're artists, man.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like as well that the intriguing thing about when you get in there, and not that I've done loads of different things or anything like that, but you get a sense that you're in over your head, but then it's the growing realization that, no, I'm not in over my head. I can learn to do this, but it's definitely a very difficult skill to learn and it definitely needs more respect. But that brings me on to, like, the theme I was going to try and expand upon was feeling over your head, because you've done things in music that I can't really begin to fathom. You've, as you say, you've battled in front of Drake, who I believe was quite a fan of.
After that, he brought me back again. At one point, me and Hitman Holler was his favourite rap battlers in the world. Everyone knows of the love Drake has for British culture and battle rap. So I'm kind of the two things in one. So Drake's flown me out to battle Hitman. Little small funny story about that actually is Drake, press conference the night before, and I went, it was Conor McGregor Wilde. The world was Conor McGregor Wilde, right? So again, because of the wrestling, I know, play the part you can play, be who you can be. Now, to all these Americans, I sound Irish. So I go to the press conference, it's all panels, and it's on YouTube. Type in Shotty or a Hitman Holler press conference. I'm there, the suit was the Arsenal one, but there I was there in the Hitman Holler one. I'm all giving it all the McGregors and all that, really putting over, trying to get more tickets sold, trying to get more pay-per-view sold. And Hitman Holler turns to me and goes, "Well, yeah, if you're so confident, put 10,000 on it." I'm like, what? Broke. I've just been giving it the big and like, I am the man. And at the time I was broke, and he's like, "You put 10,000 on it." Oh my God, my soul left my body. They're waiting on a sentence. And the only sentence I can say, I've got a choice of okay or no. And if I say no in the battle rap world, they're going to be like, "You're broke, get out of here." And that's going to be his content the next day. Drake seen the look in my eye, and Drake went, "No, no, no. I'll give the winner 10K. I was like, "Oh, thank you." I was like, "Yeah, go on then, I'll do that. So the next day is the event. Drake shows up with Hitman Holler. And,
Was this before Hitman was on, like, Wild Now?
Yeah.
And was, like, a mainstream name? Okay. Yeah.
So, but in our world, in battle rap world, he was God. He was the coolest. Right. He was the man. And mine and his styles were so similar. Really aggressive, in your face. But, like, you know, a lot of people likened us to each other. James Johnson played for the Toronto Raptors, and he's there, he's got all these big chains on and stuff. He shows up with Hitman Holler, and we're on the stage, and Hitman's known to like bring a gimmick out, like he'll bring a guy out on stage to do something, or there'll be some kind of, and at the time I was living in Toronto, and I had a lot of like friends who were notorious gang members or whatnot, and people knew that my backing in Toronto was like significant, like you really couldn't mess with me in Toronto because who I know and stuff. So was we on stage, this guy comes and gets up on stage and he goes, "Keel Strip, fuck all y'all." And Keel Strip, Keel is a place in Toronto. So he gets on the stage and he's like, basically tells us all to fuck off. And I'm stood there looking at him and I'm thinking, this is one of Hitman's gimmicks. And Hitman's looking at him thinking, this is Shotty's gimmick. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Chaos ensues. Bear in mind, there's 10K on the line. Drake's in the crowd with, honest to God, someone that looked like he'd ate Dave Bautista for breakfast that morning. This guy was juiced to the gills, bro. He was a genetic freak, to quote the Big Bad Booty Daddy. He's absolutely mampy out of his head. And Drake sat there with him. This guy comes up, kicks off, and then Hitman Holler punches him, throws him off the stage, and it's real at this point. He, like, beat this guy up. But once this guy comes off the stage and hits the floor, he gets up and looks directly at me like, "Hogan,
you. He's coming at me, and I was the one behaving. I'm like, what the hell? Comes at me, and it's all on YouTube. A football kicked him in the face, knocked the guy out. Someone else woke him up with a punch. So anyway, and Deadmau5 was there. I was like, this was the first event I took Deadmau5 to. It was all awkward. And then, so a few hours later, my friend Tycoon Tax, who's one of the battlers out there, he comes in and he goes, yo, there's hella guys outside asking for Shotty and Arsenal and all these rappers. And all these guys, all these big gangster rappers, was in the back taking the chains off, hiding the chain and hiding. Me?
It's like Sean getting out of Montreal.
This is really it, bro. but I've had a drink, and at this point, I've just won a battle, and I'm with one of my friends from Salford. So we give it the absolute Mancunian. Oh, come on, Edward! And we think all these big-eyed gangster battle rappers are going to come with us. And it was snowing. It was crazy snowing. And we leg it out there. Come on, then, let's have it. Turn round. None of them came with us. It was me, my friend, or my former friend, and James Johnson of the NBA. Of the Toronto Raptors, and he was down with it. He was ready to scrap with us. He was like, "Yo, y'all some real dudes, man. Y'all some real dudes." Like, holy crap, this is crazy. But Drake beelined and got the hell out of there and never gave me my 10 grand.
Oh, man.
But he saved me the embarrassment of me saying that I don't have 10 grand.
Yeah, true.
Shout out to Drizzy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You mentioned there Deadmau5, who obviously you've collaborated with in the past. You've also, I believe, collaborated with James Arthur as well on a track. You've done a lot of different things. So this brings me to the special sort of, before we get to your third and final match, the kind of special little mini segment of Desert Island Graps, where we get you to take also not just three wrestling matches, but you get one album, one movie, and one luxury item. Can be anything. So I feel like it's only right to go album with you first as a musician. I'm guessing there's quite a lot of choice to be made here.
I'm going to go with WWF The Music Volume 4.
Wait, no, I wasn't expecting this at all. I was expecting like Illmatic or like something really hip hop. I don't know what's happened here.
On the desert island, dude, I'm gonna need a backyard bed. I'm gonna need an island bed. What am I gonna come out to?
Of course I'm coming out to
Sexual Chocolate, Mark Henry. No, I'm joking, this isn't my selection.
Oh, thank God. I was really concerned there. I was like, yes, I'm interviewing a rapper, he's gonna have some great ideas here, and then you came out with that. No disrespect to Jim Johnson, one of the most underrated people in WWE history
and music production.
Oh, like, man,
just
as
a musician, like that guy, I remember watching one piece on him when he was talking about he writes riffs off the basis of the way a man walks, and if you think about it, the Kane, like the whole Kane, just everything, he's like, he was amazing. I don't know why they stopped working with him, but my album would probably be I'm going to say Capital Punishment by Big Pun.
Okay.
I can listen to that top to bottom. That's me being a rapper though. Like, I don't know. Like, this is a tough one.
It is. I was going to say, because when I did this series with Tom, the normal host, I went, because I didn't grow up, I got into like hip hop and rap and stuff later on. Yep. The first genre that I was into was like punk rock. So mine was a Green Day album.
Sick.
But you've also like incorporated a bit of rock into your, like Shoot Hill, which check out everyone. It's one of your bigger songs, I think, on YouTube. It blew up quite a bit.
Yeah, on Spotify. That album did really well. We got a deal with Sony from that album. I'm working on a follow-up rock and roll album now. But rock and roll and metal has always been a part of my life. Again, because of wrestling. Like, you know, you come up with wrestling, especially the Attitude Era, it was all heavy guitar-based stuff. Not to mention the fact that I'm from Manchester. Oasis, Stone Roses, Happy Mondays, Joy Division. It's like just integrated into our culture and who we are and how we express ourselves. Massive Arctic Monkeys fan, as you can probably tell with that album. It's just heavy music. All music, I love all music, man. Like, you'll be hard pressed to, except for Donk. I don't like Donk and shit like that.
Was that a Northwest thing as well?
No,
was it not? All right. I'm sorry. I'm
even
very
if
mistaken
it was, we're not claiming it, even if it was.
Okay.
I don't know. Do you know what? I'm going to be honest as well. Like, I can't always, because we've got to take it to the concept here as well. Like, I'm on a desert island and this is going to piss some people off. Rap can annoy me after a bit,
like,
because it's my job, and because, do you know what I mean? Like, I want a bit of escapism, or to listen to something that I can't do or I admire. So, oh god, do you know what I'm going to say? I'm gonna have to say, what's the story of mine? Definitely maybe. You just can sing to your heart's content and just have a buzz.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've stayed true to your roots there as well, with Manchester.
Yeah.
Although, did you say you were from Salford?
No, I'm from Manchester.
I was going to say, you had a mate from Salford. Right, okay, yeah, right. Because I was going to say, is that not the wrong territory? But fair enough.
No, yeah, I'm a Harper A Manchester, hardcore Man City fan, an ambassador for Man City. They play, like, I have a good, like, relationship and job with Man City. True Mank blue, as Mank as you can imagine. That's me.
Fair play.
Yeah.
What's the next one? Movie. You've got to pick one movie to take onto the desert island.
Scarface.
Scarface. Fair.
Yeah.
That's more of a rapper choice. That's more what I was expecting.
Scarface instantly.
What is it about Scarface?
Just everything. The rags to riches story. I'm from an impoverished area and stuff like that. And like, to see someone, you know, go over to the States and climb up the ladder in the only way that was allowed to him, and then the self-destruction and stuff. I've seen it so much in my life with people around me and stuff. And at one point I was a bit naughty, you know, I was being naughty. So there's loads of stuff I can relate to. And then it was just like one of a kind. Like, Miami looked beautiful in there. Like, just Pacino was absolutely amazing in it. Some of the most iconic scenes in movie history in there. And I also think it's a comedy, it's a horror, it's a gangster movie, it's a romance, it's a tragedy. It's amazing the way it's wrote and stuff. Nothing's too convoluted, and nothing's too like, oh no, that wouldn't happen. It just, besides the bit when he takes 1,000 bullets and the excuses, oh, he's had a bit of beak. Like, besides that,
he had a lot of it though. There were a lot of it all around.
And I love the video game, though, when PlayStation came out with the video game, as if he didn't die, as if he turned around and he got the guy. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. I've forgotten all about that. That's quite a forgotten game as well.
Yeah, man, it was so funny. It was like what Grand Theft Auto turned into, because you could go to islands and do all this smuggling, and it was really customizable, but amazing. And yeah, Scarface is one of them things where I'm like, oh, I haven't watched Scarface this month, and I'll make sure I watch it. I just love it.
Yeah,
fair. Line for line, and the music, the soundtrack, oh my god, amazing.
And finally, we got a luxury item. Now, some people choose practical things, some people go for like, oh, I'll take like toilet roll or like a bed. I went for a guitar. Some people go for like a book, or it can be anything you want, but what would yours be?
Luxury item. I like yours, guitar, because you're going to get to occupy your mind and learn something and get better exactly. and find a skill yeah. to get. I think it would be something like that. My luxury item would be, I was going to say a ball, but Tom Hanks did that, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, but volleyball, though. You can do a football if you want.
I could do a football. Go on, then. I'll do a football.
Yeah. Fair play. As Man City been a since birth?
Just love them to... My family, it's not a no choice thing. My family are all Reds, but I wasn't... Well, not all my family. A good portion of my family are Reds. I wasn't in a football when I was very little. I didn't get it. It was boring watching, like... They would watch United, and you know, it was boring. But there were certain parts of my family that was in the city. And when I was about 4 or something, I seen Man City, and I was just blown away by it. And that was it. Like,
and I mean, I can only imagine as a Sunderland fan what it feels like now, because you've gone through them through all the highs and lows, yeah. and now finally. In the past sort of decade or so, they're actually sick. And I don't know, what's that like?
Mental, bro. We could go right back down to Division 2 now and I'd be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
We've
done it.
This is my wildest dream, bro. Like, I could not imagine. I'm still pinching myself from the Rubino signing. I can't believe it. I can't believe it, bro. I was there. £5 a ticket, main road. 50p a pie. Just... absolute getting hammered off Sunderland, getting hammered off everyone. Like, I went to a game and got hammered off Southampton like 4-5 nil, and I was just like, I loved it. I just love this team. Like, yeah, man. I always like the, like, we go back to Owen and stuff. I always like the underdog stuff.
Fair. I mean,
they're not the underdog anymore.
Well, I was going to say your team broke my heart in the 2014 League Cup final.
Yeah,
it's where Barini took the lead for us, and I loved Barini. He was like my guy. I don't know what it was about him. He wasn't the best, but he just grafted. He tried so hard all the time, and he was on loan. He wasn't even our player.
Where
and
was he from? Where did you get him from?
Liverpool.
Right. Yeah.
But then I think he signed for us permanently a little bit later on, but. He's off in like Turkey or somewhere now, but then Yaya Toure just looped one up somehow. I don't know what happened. It was one of them. It was like a proper gut punch.
Yeah.
And afterwards, because I was at uni and I was in like the college bar, and all my mates were around and stuff. Didn't cry. I wanted to so bad. I was like, no, I'm gonna hold it in. Just had a pint. And because I never cried, I'm waiting for the day when it finally hits me and I'm just in the middle of the shops or somewhere. And I'm just like, no, I can't believe it.
Yeah. My first one for that was a Gareth Southgate missing a penalty, Euro 96. I cried for 2 days, man. Like, I cried like we lost someone. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
it's a funny old
it's
sport.
Stupid. It's stupid what it does to us. But yes, that's for all the Americans listening, because our audience has quite a bit of Americans. They will have no idea what we've just talked about.
Sorry,
but,
guys.
But we do have to get on finally to your third and final match to take on to the Desert Island. So what are you going for?
I am going to go with the Cat versus Trishno. This is without a doubt my favourite wrestling match ever. This blew my mind, and I feel like this match shaped what wrestling is today, like what Jim Cornette hates, but this was it done right. 5 more minutes, Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn at Living Dangerously 99, the best thing I've ever seen in a squared circle.
According to feedback I've gotten at ECWWrestling.com, the fans seem to think this is going to be a walkthrough for Rob Van Dam, that it's money in the bank, that it's a foregone conclusion that Van Dam is leaving Asbury Park, New Jersey as a double champion, still with the world television title belt in tow. I, however, would like to make a bold prediction. I feel that Jerry Lynn is going to seize the moment, and that tonight, live on pay-per-view, ECW Living Dangerously is Jerry Lynn's night. Tonight, he grabs the brass ring. Tonight, we crown Jerry Lynn the ECW World Television Champion.
A lot of people in this series pick ECW stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of people pick Awesome Tanaka. And I feel like, in a different way, but with a similar spirit behind it, I feel like Lane and RVD is a similar sort of thing. Why do you, what do you think it is about that, that sort of ECW appeal?
They just, them two particular matches, them matchups, I should say, Van Damme and Lane are awesome, and Tanaka, they just hit that center point of it being amazing technically. The story's building correct in the ring. The athleticism's unbelievable. And then you get that sharp hit of an unbelievably stiff chair shot which bends the chair in half, and you just don't know where to go. It's not garbage wrestling. The chairs are used in them particular matches. The chair shots are the big things like that. They're used at the right time. Whereas people who didn't watch ECW, because growing up, that was my favorite company. Right. People who didn't watch ECW, they remember it as this garbage fed because the logo had barbed wire in it. But this is a company that had Candido, Lance Storm, RVD, Jerry Lynn, Nova. Nova was the most innovative wrestler ever. Nova was God to me. I remember seeing Nova doing a DDT and a stunner at the same time. And you have to take it into the context of the time. It was just unbelievable. Roadkill, Danny Doran, Chris Chetty, Taz. I'm the biggest Taz mark in the world. Right. For the purpose of the audio, I'm showing Jack my FTW t-shirt. I have Joey Styles, the one man commentary team. You can't beat him. Like, that was, to me, that was just that just encapsulated everything. It was like, it was Nirvana. It was punk rock and roll. It was perfect, man. And we all know that WCW and WWE changed their whole identity because of this little small rebellious company. But that particular match, Van Damme and Jerry Lynn, of the series, that one, Living Dangerously 99, it was amazing because these guys are stalemating each other. They're just as good as each other. Lynn's just as good as Van Damme, the story is. But he's overlooked. The fans will always rather Rob Van Damme. And Van Damme had Fonzie there with the whistle, larger than life. Every exchange they have, Van Damme wants to turn to the crowd for the adulation and be like, I'm the man, look what I can do. And bro, I timed one of them. It was like 4 minutes until he got back, until he had another move. He's like, he's showboating, he's hot dogging and grandstanding for 4 minutes. And it's like, but I'm so entertained because I agree you are the best on the planet and I love you to bits, but I also want Jerry Lynn to beat your ass. And it's like anyone else, like you have these signature moves. Everyone has these five or six signature moves in the match. And every time Van Damme was doing his, Lynn had an answer that we'd not seen before. I remember one where I think Van Damme went to hit Lynn with the chair and he ducked, and then Lynn like came out and fucking jumped and just like famous as slash leg drop Van Damme straight onto the chair. There was a piece when he threw him into the turnbuckle and then jumped onto the ropes at the side and did like this cartwheel sunset flip onto the chair. Just beautiful. And I think they told the story of one-upsmanship so much. And then again, they would hit us with crazy chair shots or them like beautiful like spinning leg drops from the apron to the barrier and stuff like that. Just beautiful. No one could sell like Van Damme. Like them implant DDTs and he would go like a lamppost in the floor. And I don't think anyone could. No, before Lynn, I don't know if people might not remember this. Before Lynn, the series was Van Damme Sabu. The stretcher match when the ring broke, and you know, it was amazing, but then the Lynn stuff really turned it up a notch, and they would do stuff and they would cancel each other out. It would be like, then they would nip up and then would face each other with the stalemate stance, and they call it spot monkey and that whatever, but they wasn't really spot monkeys because there was so much psychology in it. Like Rob's just that little fraction better than Jerry, but in this match he's coming undone, and the crowd start to call him, because Rob was the whole effing show, and then the crowd start calling Jerry the new effing show, and then the match runs to a time limit finish,
And then Jerry Lynn, and that's like, no, 5 more minutes, and the whole ECW arena, 5 more minutes, boom, 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 boom. 15, 16-year-old me. The fuck out, bro.
John Finnegan was about to award the matchup to Jerry Lynn.
How did you first watch it? Was it a tape? Was it tape, tape trading? Or...
The Coliseum in Manchester. I have to give a shout out to this guy, because this guy ended up becoming a music promoter for a bar called Ruby Lounge in Manchester. And he booked me a lot. I was truant in school, and I used to wag school a lot. And I would take the bus, go right past school, go to the city centre of Manchester, and I'd go to this wrestling shop in the Coliseum. And I would just pretend I was browsing the shelves that long, but like the whole day. As a kid,
when I look back,
like as a kid, I thought, he's not going to notice, I'm just going to wag it in here. But then when I look back, it's like, yo, I used to stand in that guy's shop for 8 hours. Shout outs to Mike, because Mike got savvy to it at one point. And he was like, look, if you're just going to stand in here, yeah, you're going to have to help out. And I remember going in there, and there was this crazy FMW poster. And I was so intrigued with Mike Awesome, but he wasn't Mike Awesome, he was the Gladiator.
Okay.
He looked like Ultimate Warrior, he had face paint, he had the mullet, he was jacked. And then there was this other mask, Hayabusa. Hayabusa. So I got asking about who are these people, and he was like, oh, this is FMW in Japan. It's like ECW. And I was like, what's ECW? It's like,
right.
And that was it for me. And then he was like, yo, you do that when you come here. You put these toys on the shelf, you do this, you put the, because he had all these signed pictures and stuff, you put these in order, never serve anyone, but I'll pay you in tapes. And so I got paid in ECW tapes, FMW tapes, Hammerlock tapes, you name it. I was like, NWA, everything. The minute I realized WWF and WCW wasn't the be-all and end-all of wrestling, that was it for me then. All Japan, New Japan, FMW, ECW. But ECW just overrode it. And it was, do you ever remember, I think it was the Dudleys. I can't remember who he was facing, but they had the hottest promo ever. It was in the ring. And he was
the heel promo.
Yeah, and he was spitting in this girl's face and like, I fuck you with your daughter and all this. Like, Bubba. Yeah. A heel Bubba in ECW.
He's nearly starting a riot. Like people are trying to get at him over the thing. Yeah.
Unbelievable. And I was like, okay, you know, just coming from this child, like my childhood, and these larger than life, like these types of characters, like Hogan and Macho and all these types of guys, to then me finding girls and weed and all this type of shit. And ECW was like, it was like growing up with me. Like I was growing up with wrestling. And so ECW was like this teenage thing where it's like, oh, fuck WWF, Road Dogg's a geek and all that type of shit. You know, being here like, what do you know about Just Incredible? Who, Aldo Montoya? Like, yeah, ECW is everything to me. And that match just epitomized ECW, because I think it's misremembered, because I think the victors write the history. And I think WWE would like you to think that ECW was hardcore trash. And that was just a small portion of what.
Yeah.
Like Shane Douglas dropping the belt and dropping the NWA belt. It's so rich with history and great matches, great wrestlers. Two Cold Scorpio, Mikey Whipwreck. It's just the best thing ever. And I think that match was the just the cherry on the top of that company.
It's a great answer. So we've got a big collection of matches there. We've got Brett Owen from WrestleMania 10. We've got Tiger Mask Dynamite Kid. And we've got RVD, Jerry Lynn. Just to round off the interview, I suppose, I was going to ask, because as people might have been able to tell from this interview, I am a fan of battle rap, which is what you made your name in initially.
You know your stuff, bro.
A little bit.
You really know your stuff, bro.
A little bit here and there. But I was going to ask you if you could pick like one moment from your battle rap career, because when I think of you, I think of there's a moment in that battle with Arsenal in London where any fans of UK grime will know Getz, and you spit a bar and Getz is up in the balcony or something, and he just reacts like he starts like hammering on the thing. You say that as well.
But Rizzle Kicks was there. There was a lot of people there, like that was just exposed, that had just been exposed to this thing, and I don't think Getz realized that level of lyricism was on the market in the UK, because he was genuinely blown away. I could see it in him, and like, he was my idol, man. Like 2000 and Life and all this, like all them early mixtapes, he was the man to me. So for him to react to me like that, it was so crazy. And then we got a good friendship from there. But I'd say personally, my most goosebump, like chill raising moment ever was my return back against Tony D. I'd been out the game for 4 years. I came back against Tony D. We sold the Ritz out together. It was an all UK card. It was Manchester versus London. Tony's one of my good mates in the scene, like my counterpart. It's like Brett and Sean in the UK battle rap game, or Austin Rock.
You've got kind of different styles as well.
Seems to work together. Like, you know, Bulldog Brett, like I make the Jerry Lynn, Rob Van Dam. We just like, it was yin and yang, and it just worked, and everything just, the stars aligned. But at that point, that some said I wasn't going to show up. It wasn't a big catchphrase, but I was trying to work it in as a big catchphrase. And I'd been 4 years on the couch, and I come back. The arena's sold out. There's like 1,400 people there, which is, it's unheard of for like UK battle rap. And we broke all these records and stuff just off me and him. And I go there, and I said, some said I wasn't going to show up. And then the whole 1,400 people, well, that's what the talk was about. For a second, I forgot all my rounds. I wanted to cry, bro. I wanted to cry. This is what I dreamed of. I was like, oh my. And then I was like, come on, getting character, figure it out, boom. And I had this classic with him, with one of my best friends in that scene. And like, it's known as the best UK battle of all time. And no matter what happens in my career, I sold the Ritz out with a good friend of mine, and we put on a classic, no matter who you think won. And that, them saying that back, I felt like The Rock when he said, the millions, millions. Yeah. I'm such a mark for all that kind of stuff. So to finally have that feeling, it was amazing, and that'll live with me forever. That.
I mean, that's a fantastic way to round it off. Shotty Horror, thank you so much for being on Desert Island Graps. What have you got planned for the future? Oh, no problem at all, man. It's been my pleasure. But what have you got coming in the future, and where can we find you online?
So all my socials are at Shotty Horror. That's at SHOTTYHORROH. Please follow Premier Battles. That's my company. We run rap battles and stuff. I got the new album. Well, I got an EP coming up with my best friend Bison Briggs called The Legion of Doom. The artwork is literally just Legion of Doom, and we have songs on there like they're just all named after wrestlers, every song, and every verse is just hella wrestling centric. So if you're a wrestling fan, which you are because you're listening to this, and you're a rap fan, make sure you get that Legion of Doom album. We got the Ted DiBiase song on there. We got Mr. Perfect. There's so many things on there that's coming up. And then my rock and roll album with my band will be out near the back end of this year. And also, look out for me popping up in an indie wrestling fed in the UK very soon.
Ooh.
For my debut match.
Okay.
It'd be great if you could be there, Jack.
I'd love to come. What I will say as well is, as big a fan of both wrestling and battle rap as I've been, been to so many live wrestling events because we put them on, I've never been to a battle rap event. So if Premier Battle starts up again once lockdown's over and everything, I would absolutely love to
and
come
along
as well.
Bring anyone, bring as many as you want. You're our guest. We'll look
Thank
after you
so much.
We'll have a good drink up. We'll watch some wrestling afterwards. I can chew your ear off about how great ECW was. But it's great to finally have a chat with you, man, because we followed each other for a while. I'm a massive fan of what you do. I'm a massive fan of what all you guys do. I think everyone at Fullaholic are absolute legends.
Thank you so much, and thanks to everybody for listening as well. Do check out Shoddy Horror, check out Premier Battles, and look out for him possibly entering the world of wrestling very soon. Thanks very much, everybody. Stay safe out there, stay positive, and I'll see you very soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.